Hi, this is Andrea Lau. I'm a Memphis journalist. I'm in Easley Recording Studio with the great Lou Bond. Mm-mm. How you doing, Lou?
I'm great, huh? Uh-oh. I'm just fine. How are you, baby girl?
I'm good.
That's cool.
I'm glad now that I'm listening to Lucky Me.
I heard that. I always liked that song. That's an emotional... Well, that song there... It's really talking about you're glad that a lady friend is gone, but you're really not, you know.
Right. That's a Jimmy Webb song, isn't it?
Yeah. That guy writes some real nice, incredibly positive. It's nice, but it's down to earth. Everybody can relate to it. Plain people, just nice, plain, regular folks, you know.
How did you run across Jimmy Webb?
In Chicago, years ago, with Sidney Barnes of the Rotary Connection. That's when all those were coming out. He came out with, I think he wrote By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Glenn Campbell stuff. He did a lot of stuff, and I don't know, it just quirked my interest, you know. He and Carly Simon. I like stuff she wrote, you know.
Was it odd in that era to be a black artist covering white songs, or was that something you even thought about?
Yeah. But to me, I never looked on songs as being where you're not supposed to do this because of your color, blah, blah. The story to the songs always interested me, you know. Because people are the same in all races, you know. I mean, you got the good, the bad, the ugly. Everybody can relate to what goes on in life, you know. So color is not relevant, you know. It don't matter. Not to me, you know. If it's something that I can relate to, then that's what I go with. If it makes sense to everybody, you know. So, pardon me for pausing too long, whatever, because I'm not a great conversationalist.
Oh, Lou Bond, you're a fantastic conversationalist, and this is going just great. Tell me, to get back to this song, I'm sure there were a lot of women in your past that you were in this situation with. Were there any really special women in your life?
Every last one of them to me was special, or I wouldn't have hooked up with them, you know. And the song really, I was never glad when any of them left, you know. Please don't go, baby, please don't go. But I just like the song, though, you know, because the story to it, you know, you can kind of relate to it, too, you know, because a personal thing about the arguments or whatever, you know, we had, but I'm glad she's gone, goddamn it. But you really don't be, you know, after you think about it, you miss the arguments, you know, whatever, because, I don't know. I don't mean to be sounding, I tell you, I have spaces in my sentences and stuff because I'm not a great conversationalist.
Oh, you're doing great. So, why must our eyes always turn backward? Where did the idea for the song come from?
People, the condition of the world, you know, where people be fighting and using violence to sell arguments or to sell disagreements. It's all over the world. And look like they could come up with another way to sell disputes other than violence, you know. A lot of people choose negativeness over positiveness. I don't know why they want to risk getting an ass whooping. Never made sense to me. Why must I be turned backwards? Shit, you know, I mean, shoot.
What was it like coming back to Memphis in the early 70s after King was assassinated here?
I think everybody felt the same thing. Bad, you know. And somehow people, you know, do stuff like that. They think they get away with something, but they really only, it's an old saying, go heap coals on their own head. You know, it made it worse for themselves. A lot of people don't believe in God or the Creator, but it's real. And you don't get away with nothing negative. You might think you know, got away because you're able to drive away or leave the scene. But you better put a hell of a taboo or whatever thing on yourself, you know. So, I don't know.
You, there's almost a kinship between this song and stuff that Marvin Gaye and Curtis Mayfield were doing at the same time. Do you feel a relationship with those artists?
Well, yeah, because, hell, we all, well, you know, everybody live in this world and everybody can has experience, negativeness and positiveness. That negativeness hangs with you longer than positiveness does. But we have to realize that the Creator is in control of all this stuff. And believe it or not, well, a person's intentions or attitude is what make them do something. You know, they pick the negativeness. But it always work out to positiveness. You know, it depends on your attitude, you know, whether it works out for positiveness for an individual. You know, if you don't mean people no harm, you know, I ain't finna knock nobody in the head to get no money. I just, you know, have to do what I have to do. Righteous, you know, but, you know, can't be mean to people no harm and stuff. And the Creator pick up on your attitude toward life and stuff always works out.
Right.
It don't be on our schedule. That's what get a lot of us messed up, you know. Well, by the time I'm 20 or 21, I ought to be done. I reach some fiscal goal, you know. I ought to have a 2-car garage, blah, 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 blah. But it don't work like the Creator decides how long whatever's gonna take for us. And it depends on our attitude, you know, how long it takes us to get the idea. So, by Marvin Gaye and Curtis Mayfield and everything, a lot of people, they can relate to life. You know, everybody experience the same type of stuff, or the same stuff, negativeness and positiveness, you know.
So, you walked in, you came back to Memphis, and you walked in the door at 926 Macklemore, and you recorded this album with Tom Nixon, and I think of Lou Bond, and I think of a guy and a guitar. I don't think of all of this instrumentation. I don't think of a string section. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about how the sessions went for this record?
They were great. It was done at Arden Studios. The whole, let's see, the strings, Memphis strings, and Bark Hayes, and Isaac Hayes' movement, the group, the movement, was the rhythm section and stuff. It was beautiful. And it created a cohesiveness, a spiritual thing in the studio, and everybody was playing with their eyes closed. You know, it was beautiful.
How did the sessions transpire? Did you do scratch tracks? and then give them to Tom, and then he went to Lester? Or, you know, how did the sessions happen?
I play guitar. Then I play guitar and sing. And they would come around to different clubs that I was performing at. And usually I had a nice crowd of people would come to visit me and stuff, and I'd get standing ovations and stuff. They would come with tape recorders, and it took them to the studio, and Lester Snell and different ones made arrangements around what I was playing, on guitar and stuff, and singing, vocally. And that's how they did it.
How are these sessions different from your earlier singles that you did in Chicago, sound wise?
I can hardly remember those sessions I did in Chicago because they were great too. They were nice also. The first session was with Mercury Records, a tune called "Ooh You Cheetah." Written and produced and arranged by Charles Stephanie. Mr. Charles Stephanie, he's passed on now. But Bobby Miller was the writer and producer. And those were his songs. He wrote for the Dells. That's when the Dells gotten hot and stuff. And he heard me performing. A friend of his named Mr. Leo Osteel. He had done different stuff in Chicago musically. And a friend of his heard me. I was performing at a place called Al's Golden Door in Chicago on the South Side, 54th and Prairie. And a guy named Walt, one of the Bronze Playboys. It was in the club with the Bronze Playboys and Bronze Playgirls. And they carried a tape of mine that they had taped in, to Leo Osteel, Mr. Leo Osteel. And he mentioned me to Bobby Miller, And I met Bobby Miller and, we started going to, practicing songs or working rehearsing songs and stuff. And they had a big orchestra and everything, but it was nice. And they were both the same. I enjoy both, all sessions.
You said that you've worked with Charles Stepney and Sidney Barnes, both from the Rotary Connection. Do you think that they were influential at all on your vocal phrasings and your stylings?
Now who was influential on that? It was Mr. Leo Osteel. He would tell me that I had to check on my diction, because when I started here, my diction was bad. It was, I wasn't saying this and, pronouncing T's and, it wasn't cool. Charles Stephanie, he arranged music for Rotary Connection. But Sidney Barnes, well, he arranged me. I think he did Rotary Connections. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff at Chess Records.
And y'all were roommates for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, me and Sidney Barnes, we were roommates for a while. I didn't have a place to stay. Sidney was kind to me and gave me a place to stay.
I heard a lot of people like Donny Hathaway were around absorbing what you were doing.
Oh, yeah, it was. Well, Sidney, by him being an entertainer and stuff, and he was a musician. So in Chicago, back in the day, that drew a lot of people together. Donny Hathaway is the Dells, the Shylights, all of us, played to what you call the Chitlin' Circuit, And Chicago is a music town. Buddy Guy, Muddy Waters, everybody. At Chess, we were at Chess, eventually went to Chess Records. That's who, that was Roto Connection and Charles Stephanie.
And you worked at Chess as well, didn't you?
I was a staff songwriter for a minute, you know, for a while, until they went out of business.
And what you brought you back down to Memphis?
So what now?
What brought you back down to Memphis?
I don't know. All I can say is, I guess it was the creator. And I was kind of trying to get away from the cold weather, too, because I was living up in Chicago and in New York, you know. And it had to have been the creator said, well, go back to Memphis for a while. Plus, it wasn't this cold, that cold down here. So I came back to Memphis, I think it was in 71. And I had a friend. It was in Chicago. His name was Mr. Lee Sane. He was a songster, you know, he was an entertainer. And he was with Chess Records when I got here. He had moved down here to Memphis from Chicago. And when I got here, he was at Stax Records. And he took me to Stax and introduced me to Tom Nixon and Miss Josephine Bridges. And took me to Stax and they got me signed. They was on the We Produce label. Me and Tim Parise. And we went on the road together, me and the Tim Parise. It was nice. We did college dates, most of colleges and stuff.
And were you a solo performer or did you have a band behind you?
No, I was solo, just me and guitar. Some ways it worked out. People liked it. And I'm truly grateful. Yeah.
And what were you playing at that time?
What type guitar? A Martin, which reminds me, if anyone knows where I can find another Martin six-string nylon, I sure would appreciate it. I'll buy it.
If I ever see one sitting on the side of the road, I'll bring it to you.
Yeah, or in a pawn shop or some, you know. I need one.
Who came up with the title for the song?
Title for what? Mr. John Harris. Been looking for John. Can't find him. We called him Koozie. He came up with the title To the Establishment and Why Must Eyes Be Turned Backwards. I wrote the lyrics, but he popped up with the title. He was a songwriter also. So that's who that was.
God, it's just beautiful. The arrangements on this just blow me away.
Yeah. It was great. It was, everybody was in a zone, a positive zone when we did that album.
Is that Willie Hall on the drums, I think?
Yes. Yep.
What did you think the first time you heard this all play back to you when it was mixed and mastered?
I thought it was nice. I was very appreciative and grateful, as I am now. What, 40, 35 years later?
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. 35 years later. What's this saying about better later than never?
Well, it still sounds brand new to me.
I'm glad you think so. I'm glad other people picked up interest because I hear it's been playing overseas all down through the years. It's overseas, I'm a star. You know.
Forever Lou Bond.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. How did you know how to leave these pockets to let the other instruments work around you?
It's come natural. I knew people would want, you know, they want to hear the whole record. And the engineering was done by Tom. He's a good engineer also, you know. But we fit, I tell you, it was a zone. We were in a zone. It was, everybody worked together. You know, the Memphis strings and the And Lester Snell did a nice job on arrangement. Everybody was great. So we just zoned in with each other.
So this is you playing a nylon string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that instrument that particularly appeals to you?
It's more sensitive to me. It just suited the mood of the tunes that I was doing,
Tell me a little bit about your tuning.
I think they call it Vespool, old spiritual tuning. Church.
Is there anything you can compare it to?
Just music, different form, just a different way of tuning. You know, it's about it's a lot of ways of tuning a guitar. I just happen to pick up on that one. You know, I like the way it fits with the mood of the songs.
Did you come up in the church?
Yeah, basically sanctified.
Church of God in Christ?
Yeah.
What was that like? What were Sundays like?
It was great. It saved you. It helped you in life. You know, it teach you mannerism, teach you respect for people. It just keep you in, you know, teach you respect for people. Yeah.
How old were you when you got your first instrument?
I had a social worker. Her name was Mrs. Ruby Davis. And she looked out for me. She I think I was 12 years old, 11 or 12 years old. I'd been begging her for a guitar. I picked up interest in them going back and forth to Sanctified Church, to the church and stuff. And different guys, you know, had guitars and stuff, and they were playing electric guitars. So she said, "Well, I can't get you an electric one. They cost so much. We'll see about getting you, you know, an acoustic." I think I was 11 or 12 years old. Wait a minute. No, I was early. It was early. Yeah, it was about 11 or 12, 10, 11 or 12, something like that. And one of the guys in the church taught me how to tune it. You know, and said, "I'll show you how to tune it, and you're on your own from now." Back then, you know, guys were, you know, if you want to do something, I show you how to do it, you know, what road to take, but you got to do the work yourself. And she got me, after I learned how to play, you know, guitar, I took interest in a clarinet. She got me a clarinet. I learned how to play that. I used to play it in the band. I learned how to read music. But I can't play guitar by reading music, you know.
The radio was another big influence on you, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, back in the day when I was coming up, I didn't have television. So it was radio.
And what kind of things were you listening to?
Well, back then, most of the people, jazz. You know, some people that I would live with would like jazz. Sarah Vaughan and the early jazz people. Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole. They influenced me a lot.
And you came up with a lot of other Memphis musicians, people like
John Gary Williams.
John Gary Williams, yeah. From the Mad Lads.
Yeah.
When did you meet him?
When John, I met in the first grade over Kansas Street School. We've been friends ever since.
He told me that you taught him a Little Rascals song. that Alfalfa used to sing.
Yeah, I can't even remember the name of the song now. But most of back in the day, see, now you see kids, they be a lot on the corner for mischief and stuff. But us, back in the day, you'd hear and see a lot of guys who, you know, wanted to be in groups, singing groups and stuff. So we'd be up under street lights on corners and stuff. You could hear people, somebody harmonizing, you know, all over the city.
Did you ever enter any talent shows or anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot, you know, that's what people were doing. Mostly music. People were interested in growing up becoming some type of musician. Now it's, you know, basketball or whatever, which ain't no bad thing. You know, just when we would come along, it was mostly music. Everybody wanted to be in some type of music, or a doctor, or a lawyer, or a school teacher. Now this next song, I think that is Carly
Simon.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I love the spoken introduction here.
But I'm scared, you know. Look, this is the reason why. Listen.
You were never scared, were you, Lou Bond?
My father sits tonight. Yeah. But I've never been too scared to try. You know, personally be shaky at first till they get started.
Right.
So, oh, I can figure it out. Oh, yeah, okay. I can figure it out.
That's right. Mm-hmm. This is a Carly Simon song. Do you remember the first time you heard it or ran across it?
It was in Chicago. Back around 67, 1968, something like that. And around the same time I run across, I got introduced to the guy that did, what's his name?
Jimmy Webb.
Yeah, Jimmy Webb. And I said, I like the way, and the tune is just nice. You know.
Before you would go in the studio and sing a song or go into the club, how do you put yourself in the place of the storyteller?
All that stuff, it be the creator, you know, that gives you, you know, puts you in a, I hate to keep using the same terminology, but a zone, you know, you're just being a, you don't know why, you don't know where that stuff be coming from. You just know it's in you, and you got to do it, you know. And the creator give you that urge to practice. To get it right, to be the creator, you know, because you can't do that stuff by yourself. You know, it's just stuff get in your head, in your body. You just, when you hear stuff, you say, damn, I got to try. I believe I can do that this way, you know.
How do you keep your voice in shape? Are there any specific exercises or anything that you do?
I run. Do a lot of running, exercise, you know, different exercise. But for your voice, you run.
Yeah, you've got amazing stamina, the way you can hold a note. And
oh, well, thank you. You have to, oh, and another thing, which is, that cleans your lungs out also is, you go to a health food place or, what is this wild cherry tree bark? It sounds, you know, crazy, but you can go to a what am I trying to say? Place where they sell different teas and stuff, and it cleans your system out, your lungs and stuff, all the phlegm out of your head and chest, Why cherry tree bark? It's a tea. You boil some water, boil a little bit in the water, and put a lemon in with it, you know, and it'll clean you out.
Sounds like a good folk remedy.
Yeah, it works. So that and exercise, running and stuff, that'll clear you up.
Right. How do you stay in shape now?
Same. I run and I got weights at the house. Do weights and exercise. I get up every morning and during the day I exercise. I have to. I've been getting older, so I don't. You know, I feel as if I was in my 20s or 30s. So, you know, I feel a little different. I miss. You know, I can tell that the age, the youth, it's not there, but. Exercise. See, pills don't do it. The pharmaceutical stuff, they don't do nothing but make you worse. And people have to realize that you be taking them pills for years and you never get better. Actually, you get worse. But exercise. A person wants to die naturally. Exercise. Yeah, push-ups, all that stuff. Life is boot camp.
Tell me, how did you get in touch with Matt from Light in the Attic?
Mr. David Leonard. Well, I mean, he had a computer. He has a computer. And a friend of mine, Mr. Mark Allen, whom we perform together sometimes. He plays guitar, acoustic. He plays real nice Spanish stuff, Latin stuff. But, they had stopped by the house. David Leonard and Mark Allen had stopped by the house and left a note. I wasn't there, but left a note on my door saying that I was on the computer. You know, so I got with Mr. Leonard. You know, and he went to his house and he pulled me up on the computer and pulled up Matt Sullivan, the name of his company, which is Light in the Attic, and got him on the. Telephone on computer stuff, and we started talking. And he told me that they were re-releasing the album, and that they were interested in artists that seemingly fell through the cracks. Different companies, and they decided that I had, and I they were right. I had
definitely
fell through the cracks. And I am very appreciative. They feel that my album deserves re-releasing. And I found out that it's been selling overseas all down through the years. You know, so I'm grateful for everything. I thank the Lord for every step of the way. You never know how stuff is going to work. It never works out the way you plan it. But if you don't mean people no harm and try not to accept any, God got your back.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Come on, Snob. What is this about?
A lady friend, Miss Sarah Chandler, which is a school teacher here in Memphis, Tennessee. She wrote the lyrics, you know, and it's. You know, you can listen to the lyrics and snob them about them jive people, them a-holes, you know. I hope that's not too strong a term. But I put the music to it, the melody.
It's beautiful.
And, I thought the two went together. Yeah.
How do you feel that you fit in with the other artists on the We Produce label and with Stax?
We were cool. I felt like we were. It was like a family, you know. Because you could go in Stax and it was some music jumping off, you know, in the different studios and stuff, you know. People were positive, you know. Music was a form of Can't remember the term I'm thinking of. Communication. Positive form of communication. It's a gift from the Creator.
It seemed like there was a real community there where people would socialize not only at work, but after work, and really cared about each other.
Yeah, they were cool. Everybody was cool. Everybody looked out for each other and appreciated each other's gift. You know, wasn't no, well, I'm better than you, or blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody respected each other's talent, you know, and assisted each other. Yeah.
How frustrating was it to be at Stacks at the very end, to walk in that door when you did rather than when Otis was at Stacks and when they were getting good distribution?
You said what now?
How frustrating was it to be at Stacks at that point in time when they were having distribution problems and records weren't selling what they should?
Oh. Well, the attitude you would take was, you would keep working on something new. You know what I'm saying? Well, I can't be crying over, you know. You always felt like it would get better. You didn't realize that was the end, you know. Hell, nobody had the attitude like, you know, that ooh, boo, hoo, hoo. You said, well, hell, let's move on. See what's, you know. So that's what we did. That's what I did. I left the city. Ended up on the streets. But that was a lesson too. Today, life is boot camp. Can't be whining and crying. Only makes it worse. Got to try something else. As long as it ain't hurting nobody else. You know, don't mean nobody no harm. Creator got your back. So I'm not gonna describe some of the challenges, cause I can tell you some.
But
what'll stop you from doing that? If a person wanna stop feeling sorry for themselves and think they've been going through some changes, find an AA meeting. Go to AA. And you hear something that'll make you shut your damn mouth. You said, damn, thank you, Lord. You end up falling on your knees, thank you. Said, I hate thank you for every step of the way. Because the show could have been worse. Yeah. So you can't be no snob.
It kills me the way you can hit those notes.
I thank the Creator. Come from exercise, you know. And that tea, wild cherry tree bark, clean you out. Got to work for it. Ain't nothing free. Here, anything worth having, you're gonna work for it. And you'll be glad you did.
I love how epic it sounds. Just the way the strings come in.
Yeah. That's Lester Snell. The arrangement is beautiful.
What's Lester like?
He's nice people. He's serious, you know. You know, he's serious type dude. He said, damn, that dude want to whoop. You know, like he want to whoop your ass or something. What's up, man? Them notes be running through his head, you know. So he cool people. He all right. All of them. The movement, the barcades, the nice people. And the Memphis Strings, all them guys, man.
Did you do any vocal overdubs after everyone else played, or?
No, that was us, me and the string and the orchestra. Straight, no second, you know, remakes or, you know, or let's do that, blah, blah. I tell you, the studio, we were in the zone. That was a nice session. Yes. I was in the room singing, and they were in the room, you know, with the instrument stuff, and we were looking at each other, and we were, you know, but no overdub and anything. It was just straight.
So here we've got you in a live performance. Do you remember where this was?
I don't remember where it was.
Let me say that I'm so in love with you.
What clubs would you play in Memphis?
I think that was over a place called Cab's Corner over in South Memphis. Charles Cabbage was the proprietor.
And what era would this be?
And it may have been, let me see, wait a minute.
Like I'm a motherless child.
Yeah, I think that was.
Sometimes I feel.
Yeah, that was Cab's Corner, I believe.
Like I'm a motherless.
And this would have been 1970s?
Yeah, around, I think it was before Stax. Then.
Like a motherless child, I'm such a long. It
may have been, it may be over at the other lands.
I think this is earlier. But you played at Otherlands quite a bit in the 90s, didn't you?
Yeah, several times, yeah.
In the 70s, when you were in a club environment, would you get the audience to really sit and listen to you?
Yeah, I usually would get standing ovations.
There's
I believe that was Cab's Corner.
There's a really fantastic picture of you at Cab's Corner that somebody dug up.
Yeah.
Would you play there regularly? Did you have a residency?
Yep. Which is over in South Memphis, on Outer Parkway and Ryle Streets. That was many years. That was back around 72 or 73. Yep, those were the days. But there's something about the music stuff. The creator. That's who it'd be, you know. A person can't be saying, "Oh, I, you ain't did shit. I mean, you ain't did nothing." Excuse me. It'd be the creator, be in you. He'll hold you. It'll hold you down. It's a habit, and you can't stop. I remember in days in Chicago when I used to be. You go out in the cold, you know, I'm talking about, I didn't have a car, you know, with your amplifier and your guitar. They had a place, called a jitney on a street, well, it's Martin Luther King Drive now, but it used to be called South Parkway. And I lived on 63rd, about 63rd, 62nd and Rose. And had to catch a jitney, wait on the jitney, it'd be cold, snow up high. It's, you know, you had to stand out there, you walk a while and, oh man. But that urge, it'd be the crater and you know, you stuff, said, damn, I just got to go and play, you know. And be going to different clubs. If you didn't have a date, a place to play, you go. They have different clubs, especially on Monday nights in Chicago, what they call open mic nights, different blues clubs. And you go with your guitar, whatever your instrument, you just have to be there. You have to play, you know. And I miss it. Love it.
What you were doing seemed so radically different than anything else you would hear at a blues club in Chicago in the 60s and 70s.
Yep. Back then, let's see, I used to play in a band called, we were called the Thrillers. It was before Michael Jackson, all this stuff. Michael Jackson didn't work in existence, but they were kids, you know, it was Jackson 5 then. But we had a group called the Thrillers, Mr. Riley Funches. He was lead guitarist, and Mr. Leroy Tyler, he was the bass, and Mr. Sidney Thomas, he was the drummer. And they heard me play at a club called The Place one night, just me and guitar. I did a song, what's the name of the song? Well, hello there, it's been a long, long time. How am I doing? You really want to know, I guess. And they, after I did it, I got a standing ovation and stuff, and they asked me if I would play with them, the Thrillers. So I started playing with the Thrillers. This was back around 65. I got out of the service in 64. So it was around 65, the fall of 65. And we stayed together till around 69. Yeah, around 68, because I can't remember now why we broke up. Everybody broke up. One thing, though, I went with Chess Records. That's when, or Mercury Records. That's when I got so-called discovered, you know, by other folks. And, when you be playing in those clubs, when I would finally got on my own and start playing in clubs, people accepted, you know. My music being different, I guess they liked the way I performed it. Because I would always get standing ovations. It used to be just me and guitar. And, you know, me singing.
Well, sometimes I think the quieter you are, the more attention you get.
Maybe so, because everybody was quiet, you know. And I was grateful. Still is, you know. Still am.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about today that you want to talk about?
No, hell, I don't like to be doing a whole bunch of talking. I tell you, I'm not a great conversationalist.
You're fantastic.
I hope this turned out okay. But I want to say that I'm grateful to the Creator. And to everyone that's showing interest in my music, in me, thank you very, very much. Hell, I just thank you.
Well, thank you, Lou Bond.
Thank you, baby girl. Thank you, everybody. I holler at you. And if I owe somebody some money, don't think I got no whole bunch of money, because I ain't shit. Damn, hell. I can't remember all y'all anyway. Hell, whoop my ass. All right. I'll pay you, though, something. Or something.